Hey, thanks so much for visiting drewskaggs.com.
You, Jeff, got this interview with Ted Kennedy a couple years ago, and it was around Valentine's Day. And I was remiss in completely, wham, bam. I mean, it flew right over top of my head.
Yeah.
Is this working now?
Yeah, drewskaggs.com? We're up, yeah.
Okay, good. So this thing flew right over top of my head. I completely forgot because you know why? I was so concerned that I would get the right present for my lovely wife.
Yeah.
Did you like?
That was good.
Was
yeah.
that believable? Was
yeah.
that good? Okay.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, thanks. So we forgot to play this, but what brought it back to me was I was down at Western Hills Florist, a florist here in Ashland, getting flowers for my lovely wife for her birthday Friday, and they were putting them together. And she says to me, long story short, she says, "We listen to you all the time in here." And they were both lovely ladies. And while I was talking to them, I said, "Listen, I promise you that I will send out a message to you ladies there at Western Hills Florist." And she specifically said to me, "We were listening to you Valentine's Day."
Yeah.
Okay? And I went, "Forgot all about the Kennedy deal that you did." Right?
Yeah, right.
So this time's it about right because what is it, about a minute and a half long?
Yeah.
This is Jeff in an interview with Ted Kennedy a couple years ago, which was right around Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
And I wasn't able to get it in. I just completely forgot about it. So we're going to play it now, tie up all those loose ends, going out to the ladies at Western Hills Florist. Thank you so much for your help. And thanks for listening. We really appreciate it. And so Ted Kennedy's, Jeff's interview with Senator Edward Kennedy, the conscious, the lion of the Senate, from a couple years ago, will take us into the break. And remember, Mary Jo Kopechne has no comment about this interview. We can be reached 1-800-551-1057.
Senator Kennedy, thanks for joining us on Airing It Out, and thanks for taking the time to talk with us.
Always a pleasure.
If you were a tree on Valentine's Day, what kind of tree would you be?
Let's see. I guess I never really thought about it. I guess a Scotch elm. Hold the elm.
That's a good one, Senator. You got any gift ideas for the guys out there?
Well, flowers. Flowers are always good.
Ah, yeah, the old standard. So what kind of gifts would you avoid?
I try to avoid all water-related products.
So the Democrat Party has been traditionally known as the party of minorities. Do you have any tips for our African-American listeners?
I never know what those people like. Well, I can't think of any, but I can ask my Senate colleague, Big Mac Osama. I mean, Balak Pastrama.
You mean...
Obama Ben...
You mean Barack Obama?
Yes, that's him.
Okay, so, finish this sentence for me. My ideal woman has...
Gills, no vocal cords, and a low tolerance for alcohol.
Okay, what did you say?
Oh, that was out loud, wasn't it? I do that sometimes. Scratch that.
Okay, and this concludes our interview. Thank you for your time, Senator.
No problem. Thank you.
Who's leading the race? This is the Cobalt Tools. 425, 450, 500, something like that.
Well, they're not showing the screen right now. So
but last time I heard, Jeff Gordon was leading, and my son is a huge Jeff Gordon fan, and my wife texted me and said that he's very excited. So I'm hope, and I know that's going to irk some people out there because I know they're very, you know, you got the Dale people, you got, you know, and I understand that. But
it's like they just started after a caution or something.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll keep you updated because there was like 80-some laps left. So we multitask here at Airing It Out. This next story goes to the heart of what our caller called in during the first break and asked about the stimulus package. This is a new package winding its way through. This is paltry. It's only $410 billion. This is editorial by the Daily Independent Editorial Board, and it's entitled 8,570 Earmarks. They write, President Obama campaigned against earmarks and even boasted that the stimulus bill approved by Congress did not include a single earmark. Well, I mean, you can believe that if you want to believe it, but they're right. He did say he would not have any earmarks in this. Now, however, in the next few days, Obama will be asked to sign a $410 billion spending bill that contains a whopping 8,570 earmarks. I take you back to the presidential debate in September at Oxford, Mississippi. Quote, President Obama, then candidate Obama, we need earmark reform. When I'm president, I will go line by line to make sure that we are not spending money unwisely, unquote. So you have that. The Independent phrases it this way. What better way can the new president show just how serious he is about not allowing members of Congress to fund pork barrel projects than to veto this spending bill? However, in this case, a veto may have more consequences than the benchmarks. Many of the benchmarks are of questionable merit. Cricket control in Utah. Rodent control in Hawaii. Trade Center in Montana. And the list is endless. Okay. So they say the list is endless. Let me give you 10 of these earmarks that President Obama said, when I am president, I will not have earmarks in any budget. I will go line by line. Did I mention Dateline, Washington, Obama will sign spending bill despite earmarks? I know that's surprising. But let me ask you something. Obama and earmarks? Coincidence? I think not. Let me give you some of these earmarks that he said he would not have under my administration. One of the most transparent administrations. That's what we're striving for. We will not have any earmarks. How about $1.7 million for a honeybee factory in Weslaco, Texas? How about $475,000 to build a parking garage in Provo City, Utah? My personal favorite, $200,000 for tattoo removal violence outreach program to help gang members or others shed visible signs of their past. Yes, taxpayers are going to pay for tattoo removal. The aforementioned Montana... the Montana World Trade Center, $300,000. How about $1 million for Mormon cricket control in Utah? I didn't know. Now listen, I didn't know crickets could be Mormons. Were you aware of that?
I wasn't.
Yeah. Is that the species of cricket, or is it a game played by the Brits? With this, you have no idea.
That's true. Yeah.
Did you? By the way, the Brits. Speaking of the Brits, my ADD kicks in here. Did you hear that the Prime Minister of Britain, Gordon Brown, came to pay a state visit to Washington, D.C. this week?
I heard that. Yeah.
Yeah. And did you hear what President Obama gave him for a gift?
No.
25 DVDs.
Wow.
They're only our most important ally.
Yeah, I mean, what kind of DVDs would be worth that kind of visit?
Of great American film classics. Something that you can go to Amazon and get for $99.
Yeah.
Now, Prime Minister Brown brought just fantastic gifts. You know, and that might seem a little, you know, but you're the President of the United States. They're our most important ally, have been for centuries. And the best you can come up with is DVDs for the guy. And he gave just stuff for Sasha and Malia, stuff for the First Lady. He brought a pen made out of wood from, what in the world was that? It was a slave ship that used to run from Great Britain. Well, I guess while I'm on it, I might as well. Oh, here it is. Let's see. A pen holder fashioned from the oak timber of the HMS Gannett, a Navy vessel that served on anti-slavery missions off Africa centuries ago. Also, I gave to Obama a framed commissioning paper for the HMS Resolute, a ship for the Royal Navy that came to symbolize British American goodwill way back when. Gave him a first edition of Martin Gilbert's 7-volume biography of Winston Churchill, whose partnership with FDR symbolized our alliance. Gave Sasha and Malia each an outfit from a clothing store, and selected 6 children's books by British authors who have yet to be published in the U.S. And we gave him, yes, 25 DVDs.
Oh!
Jeez. All right, back to these. Back to this. The pork in this latest bill. $650,000 for beaver management in North Carolina and Mississippi. $2.1 million for the Center for Grape Genetics in New York. Did you know there was genetics involved with grapes?
Not really.
All right, yeah. $332,000 for the design and construction of a school sidewalk in Franklin, Texas. Not enough money for schools in the stimulus already? How about $2 million for the promotion of astronomy in Hawaii? Yeah, I mean, because nothing says new jobs for average Americans like investing in astronomy. Can't, right?
Exactly.
I mean,
yeah.
And of course, you all have probably heard about the $1.7 million for pig odor research in Iowa. Remember, our president was going to veto these things. Was not going to happen. We are going to get rid of this. We are going to be all about fiscal responsibility. You know, and people wonder. I mean, you laugh, but you know, come on. When are people going to wake up and realize that it's both sides of the mouth happening here? But here's how the Daily Independent, this is how they spin this. $410 billion spending measure is an omnibus bill. You know what an omnibus bill is? It's basically funding the operations of government.
Right.
Yeah, I didn't know pig odor research was that, but you know how it goes there. A veto would mean Congress would have to redo work it has already taken lawmakers this long to complete. Well, the last thing we want to do is make Congress work harder. I mean, bless their hearts. I mean, they've been working so hard with the, what was the Chimpanzee Act they passed last week? Yeah. So, the Daily Independent says, while President Obama will be violating a campaign pledge by signing this bill, he deserves a pass this time. Yes. Yes. Let's give him a pass. You think Bush would be getting a pass for this? Now, listen, I'm not defending because he spent it too. Don't get me wrong. But, and then they go on to say it's time for Congress, however, to rein in such spending. Well, how about now? How about we start now? I mean, after all, we're cruising in on, you know, $2 trillion. I mean, probably be nice to start now. You know, we received a call from Josh. Remember what Josh called in?
Yeah.
And he talked about weatherization. How could I be against weatherization? It's terrible. I mean, it's a good thing. It's going to save money. It's going to people put to work. It's going to be weatherizing homes.
Yeah.
And I pointed out that why should we have to weatherize other people's homes? And then I realized, well, I mean, we're paying for their mortgages now, so, I mean, what the hell? We might as well go ahead and weatherize them. But in the Daily Independent, they ran an article called Programs to Receive Stimulus Funding. Now, remember, Josh said it, and the administration has said it all along. This is about jobs, 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 jobs. This is what this is about. It's going to create jobs. So we've got stimulus, real local areas where stimulus money is being put into play. You tell me if this is going to create lasting, long-term, good-paying jobs. Local officials are still waiting for an actual dollar figure, although the local share of the stimulus package is expected to be, quote, a very large jump statewide, according to David Carroll, executive director for the Northeast Kentucky Community Action Agency. We really don't have time for this, do we? Because it's relatively long.
Yeah.
But I guess we can just do this. We were talking about weatherization. Said one of the biggest program increases will be for home weatherization. Explaining the primary purpose of this program is to evaluate, repair, and reduce air infiltration in local houses. So we got that. And we got the rural transportation program. It's going to be buying new vans. Summer youth employment program that had been phased out several years ago will be brought back to life. The Workforce Investment Act program will employ several hundred youth throughout the area during the summer, noting a different agency administers the program for Boyd and Greenup County. As most people know, teenagers like to spend money. Well, I'm glad that our money's going to help teenagers spend it. It's going to allow high school and college student age 16 to 24. Do you consider 24 youth?
Not really.
Yeah, well, government does. It's going to help them earn income this summer. But it's going to hire part-time adult supervisors to oversee the youth. Funding will be available under the WIA program to assist adults who are underemployed or unemployed and are seeking to begin or further education or training opportunities. Funding will be available for adults that are laid off or have lost their jobs. All right, the Head Start program is going to see a funding increase. Provides these children with a comprehensive program to meet their social, emotional, health, nutritional, and physiological needs for 3 and 4 year old children of Carter, Elliott, Greenup, and Lawrence counties. How exactly is that stimulating the economy? It's not. I'm not saying that any of these programs are bad. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying here is that's not going to provide long term jobs for this area, which increases the workforce, increases the money people make. You know, none of this stuff is going to private business, which is what stimulates jobs in America. Long-term lasting jobs, not make work summer youth program jobs. Because after all, teenagers like to spend money, so we need to foot the bill for that. So here you go. I just gave you 4 examples of this stimulus package that is supposed to create jobs, 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 jobs. Yeah, it's creating jobs. But you're telling me that these jobs are going to help out people that have families in this area that have lost their jobs? It's not. They're all government programs, each and every one of them. I just gave you 4 examples of how this quote-unquote stimulus package is being put to work in our local area. And for the life of me, I don't see how that's going to stimulate the economy. You know, talking about how giving a reason that teenagers like to spend money, so taxpayer money needs to go to help teenagers spend money. That's just where we've gotten in the discourse these days. How about teenagers go get their jobs, go get their own jobs? Well, Skaggs, there's no jobs out there. Yes, there is. If you're a teenager, they're out there, you know. And if not, go buy a lawnmower and start cutting grass. We got Justin on the line. Hey, Justin.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going great, man. How about you?
Buddy, if I was any better, I'd be in heaven.
Yeah, well, we hope that's, you know, we hope that's not for quite a long time. But you sound better than the last time you called. You were sick. Hey, so yeah. I'm glad to hear everything's cleared up. What do you want to talk about?
Hey, stimulating the economy. I've told you before, I work in a public school system.
Right.
And the smartest idea I've heard from stimulating the economy came from a custodian in the school.
Uh-huh.
And he said everybody from age 18 to 65, actually he said 35, but I would go ahead and increase it to 65.
Okay.
Give them $1 million.
Okay.
Any working person in the American society who works for a living, give them $1 million and tell them to invest it. Spend it. Spend it however you want. If you want to buy a new house, buy a new house. If you want to buy a horse, buy a horse. If you want to buy a four-wheeler, buy a four-wheeler.
Right.
If you think about it, and I know Congress won't allow this to happen, But $300 million, roughly, which, I mean, there's not that many Americans who work, but still, $300 million versus $800 billion plus $400 billion plus another $750 billion, I think, if you think about it, realistically, that would stimulate more than this money that I'm not even going to see. In fact, I'm going to be paying that money, and I'm never going to see a dime's worth of product from it.
Well, of course you're not, because the stimulus package is smoke and mirrors. There's nothing truly stimulative about it. You've got a president up there that turns it over to Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid. That's his first problem. He didn't write this. He's just selling it.
Right.
I mean, Reid and Pelosi are who wrote this bill. I mean, after all, there's $8 billion in this for a high-speed monorail between Vegas. Let's see. Who represents Nevada?
Oh, yeah.
Harry Reid. And that goes all the way to California. Who represents California?
Pelosi.
That's right, Nancy Pelosi. It's funny how that ties in. I think the numbers are a little skewed there. If you got $300 million and you give $1 million a piece, that's not $300 million. That's,
well, yeah, I understand that.
But
I
understand the theory behind it. But see, here's the deal. They think we're idiots. We don't know how to spend our money. And you can't invest. How can you invest it in the stock market? It goes down, you know. You shouldn't be able to do that. We know how to spend your money better. That's what it comes down to. And it allows them to retain their power, to flex their power, to give out goodies here and goodies there. And it's, is it change? Let me ask you this. Is it change?
No. I mean, the point about the earmarks, which, I mean, it frustrates me because I hear a lot of conservatives bash the Democrats for the earmarks. And
I'll bash the Republicans too.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, because if we look at it, there's just as many, well, I won't say just as many, but there's quite a few Republican earmarks that are thrown into these packages also.
Oh, absolutely.
And to be honest, I mean, you yourself, living in Kentucky, I'm guessing you live in Kentucky.
Yes.
I live in southern Ohio. You know, we benefit a lot from the pork that Robert C. Byrd put into West Virginia's highway systems. We benefit from that. But also, there comes a point in time when you're accountable, too. And when you keep porking this money in and porking it in, you know, I'm not seeing all of it. I'm seeing a little bit of it that helps me with you know, travel coming in and out of my state. Same for you, but I'm not seeing the rest of the fork the way it's spent responsibly. And that's the thing that frustrates me. And there was something else I wanted to talk to you about real quick before I jump off here.
Sure.
Jump away from the economy.
Okay.
Criminal justice system.
Yep.
I'm frustrated with that also.
Yep.
With me, Drew, when I was in school, we had what they called the alternative school. And if you screwed up bad enough to be sent to the alternative school, you went and did what they called PT time, and then you also did your work. So you made up whatever it was you missed, and you did physical training. You ran. You did your exercises. I'm thinking that the criminal justice system should maybe look into this alternative school system, and what they ought to do is not necessarily have them on a chain gang out on the road like what they used to in Alabama, but
right.
Say there's a hillside over here on the west side of Ashland, and it needs to be moved so we can build a complex here. Take those people, build that hill or move that hillside. Make them work physically every single day for the entire week, 6 out of the 7 days. Give them their seventh day, let them rest, but make them work 12 to 16 hours a day. That way, whenever they get out of prison, they're not going to want to go back. And if they do get that hillside moved in their lifetime, okay, boys, let's move it over here now. Move it someplace else.
Right. Make work, kind of like what's going on right now.
Well, you know, and going back to the economy, my mind's been buzzing with a lot of things.
Right.
You know, I hear about all this go green, go green, go green.
Yes, yes.
Tell these people to draw off the welfare system. I'm not bashing the welfare system. I think that it has some positives. But these people that draw off of it, you know, you want to go green so much? I'm looking at trash as I'm driving up the road right now. Make them pay for their check. And if they can't physically do that kind of work to pay for their check, find something that they can do, be it read the children, be it whatever. Make them do something to pay for themselves.
Yeah, but I don't think people fully understand, have not really grasped what this stimulus package, TARP 1, TARP, well, not even, I'll put those out, this particular stimulus package, what the end result of this is. What this is a massive expansion of the welfare entitlement system.
Yes, it is.
It is never put that way. It's put under the cloak and the guise of jobs. It is more palatable to the American people if that's what they think that they're going to get out of this. But in reality, if you strip it all bare and look at where this money's going, this is a massive expansion of the welfare system, which, by the way, a Democrat by the name of President William Jefferson Clinton signed the end to welfare, work to welfare law, or welfare to work law in 95, which drastically reduced the welfare rolls.
Right.
And I hear so many people say, well, it's going to be a return to the Clinton years. Are you kidding me? Clinton did a lot of good things. He did nothing like this. He pulled back from this. And what Bill, this is just massively growing it.
Bill Clinton has also been on the record as saying that, you know, Obama, part of the reason why the stock market is in the shape that it's in, and part of the reason why investors are in the shape they're in, Clinton himself has said Obama needs to quit calling it a crisis. He needs to just understand, yes, we have a problem, but quit being so pessimistic about it. Be a little more optimistic about it. Let's face it, if I'm told that I'm going to lose my money investing in the market, I'm going to invest in the market. Why would I? But if I'm told, hey, this is turning around, whether it is or whether it's not, you know, politicians don't ever seem to have a problem lying. So, I mean, and I'm not saying lying is the right thing to do, but be a little more positive about it instead of talking about it being negative all the time. And that, in my opinion, would also help the market.
He doesn't understand the stock market. I'm just telling you that right now. Let me read you a quote. This is from the president this week. What I'm looking at is not the day-to-day gyrations of the stock market, but the long-term ability for the U.S. and the entire world economy to regain its footing. And you know, the stock market is sort of like a tracking pole in politics. You know, it bobs up and down day to day. And if you spend all your time worrying about that, then you're probably going to get the long-term strategy wrong. Are you kidding me? Bobbing up and down, it is sinking like a stone. It's down over 3,000 points since this guy was elected.
And how many weeks was that?
Huh?
How many weeks was that?
It was November 4th is when he was elected. So when he was elected, it was 9,600. You know, it's 6,600 now. You know, he's busy remaking society with this stimulus deal and the massive expansion of the wealth of the welfare system in America. But they are focusing not a whit on the wealth destruction in this country now underway. I mean, there's no other way to put it. It is destroying the wealth of working families in America. And if he doesn't focus on it at all, there's not going to be much left of the American economy for him to reinvent.
Yeah.
And to do all these programs that he so badly wants to do. He's just not all that interested in the destruction of the life savings of Americans.
It's easy to cut a budget whenever you've increased the budget four times its regular amount. I mean, you know, the goal of, we'll cut it in half by the end of my administration, first term of my administration, or 2010 or whatever the date is. It's easy to cut that, I guess, whenever you've doubled it or quadrupled
when you spend, and you hear, and I know we're long, Jeff, but when you hear all the time, oh, well, we can't continue on the spending that Bush did or the spending that the Republicans did or whoever did. We can't continue on that path. But then the solution is for them to spend more. That makes no sense. And he's tentatively trying to dip his toes in the water about this stock market thing, but let me give you this as an example when I say he doesn't understand it. On March the 3rd, he said, stocks are a good buy. Quote, profits and earnings ratios are starting to get to the point where buying stocks is a potentially good idea, if you've got a long-term perspective to it.
Right.
What is a profit and earning ratio? There is no such thing. There is a price-to-earnings ratio, otherwise known as a P.E. But the economy is just deteriorating. The credit crisis continues, and they're still formulating a response. And the investor class is sitting out. He's giving nobody any impetus to buy stocks, to get back in the stock market. And it's doom and gloom each and every day. One thing Clinton was never about the doom and gloom, never. Hello?
unless we as voters get in together as a voting bloc and do something.
Hey, you're breaking up, Justin. He's breaking up. Listen, I appreciate you calling, Justin. And I think the last thing he said was, unless we get together as a voting bloc, we got together. this is what we wanted. This is what we're getting. It's not what people wanted. It's not the change that people are looking for. You think this is the change people voted for? What is occurring right now? Just the wholesale destruction of American wealth? Absolutely not. How about this one? Part of the stimulus package is they're increasing unemployment benefits, the length of time you can be on it, and whatnot. However, the caveat that's really not told people, Dateline, FoxNews.com, Uncle Sam takes his share from jobless benefits. Some Americans are learning a jarring lesson about unemployment as they prepare their tax returns. At a time when the newly laid off are swelling unemployment rolls to record numbers, the painful surprise for many is that jobless benefits are taxed like income. Yes. Yes, that leaves many on the hook for hundreds or thousands of dollars because the taxes aren't automatically withheld from benefit checks. To make things worse, some people also are hit with a state unemployment tax bill. Let's see. Inna Shaluskaya, a 29-year-old New Yorker who was laid off from her job as a sales planner, said this is not logical whatsoever. It's actually funny in a way. We'll help out with the unemployment benefits and then we'll take some back. It would make better sense if they just paid less. Yeah, you're right, Inna, but it's government. They're going to get it wherever they can get it. So even though you're drawing unemployment, you still got to kick back to the mafia family known as Uncle Sam. Those benefits that are being put to you. So while we're doing all this, I've got these. Dateline Jerusalem Post. Netanyahu to lower income and business taxes in Israel. Let me ask you something, Jeff. How hard is it to figure out that it's better for government to be broke than for the country to be broke? It's not that. It's common sense.
Right.
It's not practiced on Capitol Hill. I understand that. But see, in their eyes, it's much better for the country to be broke than government. Because after all, government is where all good things flow from. India announces more tax cuts. You've got people across the country, across the world, Israel and India are just two examples, countries, that are cutting taxes, both on individuals and on business. That's their response to what's going on. Our response is we need to raise taxes across the board. Where is this thing from? We dealt with this when the bigwigs for the auto companies when they rolled up to Capitol Hill, hat in hand, hand out, saying we need money, we need money, we need money.
Right.
Remember they flew their corporate jets up there.
Yes.
You remember this?
I do. Yeah.
Well, and the media was just absolutely outraged. And people like Jean-Francois Kerry, otherwise known as John Kerry, they're just up in arms. I think the latest was somebody had a Northern Trust who took $1.5 billion in the government bailout, had a golf tournament out on the West Coast, and they're just furious that it was at a posh five-star resort and all this other stuff. You've got have we got Toga, right?
Yeah.
This is John Kerry on the Senate floor last week, saying the reaction in some quarters suggests that I had attempted, like a modern day Dean Wormer, in Animal House.
Toga, 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 Toga.
To ban fun of any kind, or that the wheels of commerce and marketing would grind to a halt. Basically saying that, no. What they're doing is wrong, but I'm not saying stop all spending. On the heels of this, the AFL-CIO, union people, union executives that just had their tushies bailed out yet again and are getting ready to be bailed out again, had their winter meeting at the Fontainebleau Hotel in Miami Beach, a 5-star resort. Now, did the car companies, and by extension, the unions, not get to the tune of $30 to $45 billion for government? Yes, of course they did. But they go hold their winter meetings at this luxury resort in Miami Beach, and you hear nary a peep. Just hypocrisy continuing. Yes, the hypocrisy alarm. Thank you. Let execs from a corporation have junkets and the media is all over them. But let the AFL-CIO go down to a 5-star resort and be addressed by Vice President Joe Biden. By the way, no press allowed in that meeting. Do you know why? Because some of it's leaked out. They're saying, have you heard of this card check system? A card check system in the union, traditionally it's been a secret ballot.
Right.
Whether you want to unionize or not.
Yeah.
They are pressing, and I would venture to say in the next 2 weeks, we'll propose an open system where it's not a secret ballot anymore. They're going to call it the Employee Free Choice Act.
Yeah.
And it allows unions to join, or workers to join unions by signing cards rather than through secret ballot elections. Yes. And President Obama has said, it has my full backing. Now, a couple different things there. The rank hypocrisy of the media just yawning at the fact that union members can hold their big shindigs down in Miami Beach, but be all over everybody else about that. That's obvious. Of course, it's the media. It's hypocrisy to the nth degree. But this card check system where it's an open, everybody knows how you're voting, that flies in the face of our Constitution. Do you go into a voting booth every single time you vote for your elected representatives, whether it's on the local level, whether it's on the state level, whether it's federal? No, of course, it's your secret. It's one of the rights ensconced and enshrined, the ability to cast a vote and not know who you voted for. But yet, when it comes to swelling ranks of unions, it's absolutely A-okay. You ought to have to be right out front. Cast a vote where everybody knows how you're going to vote. I hadn't meant to get in that, but it's just a segue. One thing to the other. Whether it's the media overlooking this and just yawning. Let me put it to you this way. I mean, could you? I'm not even going to do it. I'm not even going to go there. I know you want me to, but I'm not. We haven't had any Hollywood news in a while, and I've talked about the amazement that I have of when Hollywood types go up to Capitol Hill for whatever pet cause, whatever they got working, you know, and they testify and they speak with the congressional leaders as if they have some special insight into this stuff. Hey, it's just a photo op for both of them. The politician gets to stand next to a Hollywood type and get a little exposure, and the Hollywood type gets to actually be thought that they're intelligent on some level because they're talking to Capitol Hill who people who are supposed to be intelligent but are in reality not. Did you get all that?
Yes.
Yeah, they're restarting, aren't they?
They are.
Darn it. All right, Dateline AP, you got the Shania ready to go.
Yes.
Brad Pitt to meet with Nancy Pelosi in Washington.
Okay, so you're Brad Pitt. That don't impress me much.
The sad thing is it's going to impress Pelosi. He's going to Washington. Pelosi's office said Brad Pitt is set to meet with the Speaker of the House on this past Thursday to discuss the 45-year-old's actor's charity efforts in New Orleans. He founded Make It Right in 07 to help build environmentally sustainable housing for low-income residents who in New Orleans who lost their homes during Hurricane Katrina. All right, you got Brilliant ready to go. Environmentally sustainable housing, biodegradable housing in an area below sea level on the coast with terrible dikes. Brilliant.
Brilliant.
Yes. Yes. Biodegradable homes beneath sea level. Jeez. So Brad Pitt's going to meet with Nancy Pelosi. Wasn't one interview with the vampire enough? Wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Dumb meets dumber. You know, I think the special effects material in Benjamin Button came from Pelosi's face. Speaking of New Orleans and rebuilding Katrina and all that, did New Orleans get big bucks from the Porculus bill? Because after listening to so much outrage of the neglect of New Orleans under that evil Bush, now that good liberals are in charge at all levels in Washington, aren't they going to rebuild New Orleans back exactly the way it was before? Hasn't it already happened? If not, why not? My question is, doesn't Barack Obama care about black people if it hasn't happened already? And I might add that because New Orleans is such a great place to live, the Jolie Pitts are going to raise their kids in France. I'm about to get into a topic here that it began on February the 18th. And it was a premise put forth by the Attorney General, the top law enforcement official in America, a guy by the name of Eric Holder. Eric happens to be a black man. And back on February the 18th, he said the United States is, quote, a nation of cowards, unquote, when it comes to race relations. In remarks made during a speech to honor Black History Month, Eric Holder said the country remains, quote, voluntarily socially segregated, unquote, making head-turning comments that could spark fierce dialogue and the ire of some conservatives. What? He called everybody in the United States. He said the United States is a nation of cowards. Why would it just irritate and draw the ire of conservatives? It ought to draw the ire of every American, not just conservatives. Quote, though this nation has proudly thought of itself as an ethnic melting pot in things racial, we have always been, and I believe continue to be, in too many ways, essentially a nation of cowards. This is truly sad. Given all that we as a nation went through during the civil rights struggle, it is hard for me to accept that the result of those efforts was to create an America that is more prosperous, more positively race-conscious, and yet is voluntarily socially segregated. Unquote. Keep racism alive. You got to. Now, he says, we're voluntarily socially segregated. You know, that bugs liberals more than... Freedom just bugs liberals. Freedom to associate with whomever you want to associate with. It just bugs them. They don't like freedom. And he calls us a nation of cowards. Insulting the entire nation, the Attorney General. And I know... you know, I've had the calls on here, be careful because white people aren't allowed to openly discuss, quote, things that are racial, unquote. Well, if he's going to call me a coward and the rest of Americans cowards, well, yeah, I'm going to opine on it too. So the black attorney general working for a black president says we're a racist nation. Liberals are never satisfied, ever satisfied. And I asked this question way back when. If Barack Obama is elected president, will racism eventually be put in the dustbin of history where it belongs? And I answered it, no, of course it won't be, because too many people make political points out of it or dollars out of it, whether it's Al Sharpton or Jesse Jackson. The problem is, we will never stop talking about it. What will satisfy liberals? I want to know, so we can get this over with once and for all. I'm tired of it. I never owned any slaves. I've never treated anyone unfairly because of their race. I never got a job, as far as I know, that should have gone to someone of another race. I'm just tired of it. But he's right on some level. We are cowards. We refuse and are scared to hold people like Attorney General Holder responsible for these irresponsible comments. Now, the reason that I didn't talk about it initially, because this reason alone, I wanted to see how long it would be before someone in the press grew a set and decided to ask the president what he thought of his attorney general's comments. That was made back in February the 18th. He called Americans a nation of cowards. It wasn't until March the 8th, 18 days after an inflammatory comment like that was made, before somebody in the press actually decided to ask the president what he thought of it. And, you know, there's a reason behind that, because the press knew, well, we can't get into this maelstrom. We don't want to throw grease on this fire. You know, we'll let it go just as long as we can, and then we'll ask a question so that we can't be accused of not actually pressing the president on a ridiculous statement that his attorney general made. That's how they think. That's how they operate. And as if on cue, 18 days later, they decide to ask it. Dateline Washington. Attorney General chided for language on race. President Obama has chided his attorney general. What's the visual you get of chiding? I chide my children. Listen, don't do that. Don't do that. That's chiding. For describing America as a nation of cowards when discussing race, wading into a tumult that flared over Holder's indictment of the way this country talks about ethnicity. Tumult? Have you even heard anything about it the last 18 days? No. So this is the press. This is how they operate. We're going to call it a tumult, even though it's not. Although, if we had done our job and actually asked the president the very next day what he thought about this, it might have become a tumult, and more people might have been made aware of it. I think it's fair to say, President Obama said, that if I had been advising my attorney general, we would have used different language. In an interview, it's your attorney general. He works for you, President Obama. In an interview with the New York Times on Friday, the president said that despite Mr. Holder's choice of words, he had a point. So you see how this works. Yeah, he should have used a little different language, really. But he had a point. We're oftentimes uncomfortable with talking about race until there's some sort of racial flare-up or conflict, he said, adding, we could probably be more constructive in facing up to sort of the painful legacy of slavery and Jim Crow and discrimination. Yeah, well, All due respect, President Obama and Attorney General Holder, some need to face up, quote unquote, to the fact that they are both over and have been for 146 years for slavery and 45 years for segregation, respectively. It's over with. Are there pockets? Absolutely. The Attorney General is black. Both major parties, Republican and Democrat, are led by black men. The president is black. And yet, we're a nation of cowards on race. This is very telling. Mr. Obama was asked whether he agreed with Mr. Holder. He hesitated for 5 seconds before responding. So you know what that was about. No teleprompter. I've got to really think about what I say here. I can't offend my civil rights bloc here. But by the same token, I really can't offend the country. So I'm going to split it in the middle and say, yeah, he's got a point, but he could have used better language. I'm not somebody who believes that constantly talking about race somehow solves racial tensions. I think what solves racial tensions is fixing the economy, putting people to work, making sure health care, learning for children, we'll have more. He basically just started giving talking points, campaign talking points. We've made enormous progress, and we shouldn't lose sight of that, he told the New York Times. Let me give you a translation of that. We will continue to play the race card whenever it suits our needs. Whenever it suits us, we'll play it. Like I said, I'm just so tired of it, of the whole thing. You know, and I'll point it out again. 600,000 white Americans lost their lives in order, one of the main reasons, in order to get rid of the evil institution known as slavery. 600,000. That's not enough. You've got to do more. You know, I read a book, and I pulled it up here because it's been years since I read it. It is from a guy named Keith Richburg, and he worked for the Washington Post, and he was the African bureau chief for the Washington Post from 91 to 94. And during that time, he traveled, of course, as the African bureau chief for the Washington Post. He traveled all throughout Africa. Rwanda, Zaire, at the time Zimbabwe, at the time Rhodesia, all of the African countries, he went to them. And he saw firsthand the wars, the famines, the mass murders, the corruption of African politics. He saw everything as a black man. And he wrote a book called Out of America, A Black Man Confronts Africa. And it is one of the most powerful books I have ever read. Because it comes to he comes to this conclusion after seeing everything that he saw. He's not African American. He is simply American. That's what he is. And the segregating that is done by liberals, whether it's Hispanic Americans, whether it's Oriental Americans, whether it's African Americans, whether it's gay Americans, they're the ones that segregate people. They affix them in these little groups, these little minority groups, and affix names to them. when they're all Americans, first and foremost. But if you'll notice how they phrase it, African American, Oriental American, Latino American, what have you, it's always an ethnicity put first, because that's how they view people. But he wrote this book, Keith Richburg did. And in it, he said, I saw true Africans here. And yes, slavery was a terrible thing. But what did that get my race? In the end, it got them here. It got them to America. And away from the squalid poverty that is Africa to this very day. And the biggest growing middle class in America is the black family. The black middle class family in America has more money than thousands put together in Africa, living on subsistence levels of a dollar a day. And he wrote this book, and he came to that conclusion that all of my indoctrinated, what had been pushed on me, the civil rights, and I'm not saying the civil rights movement was bad, don't get me wrong, but the civil rights movement of today is nothing but race baiting. And he, as a black man, was able to write a book and say, I'm glad that this happened because I am able to be an American. But yet, our Attorney General looks at America and still sees no progress on the issue of race in this country, when all he has to do is look in the mirror and progress stares right back at him. But, according to him, we're still a nation of cowards. I'm so tired of it. And I know a whole heck of a lot of people just like me that don't see color. Note it, but don't see it. That's honest there. I mean, you look at that, and vice versa. You look at it, you see a white guy, it's just a white guy. It's just a black person. Who cares anymore? But it's those guys, the liberals, and the people that still have a vested interest in this game, and that's what it is, a game to them. It is ingrained in them that we are cowards in this country after all that has occurred. And that book is Out of America, A Black Man Confronts Africa by Keith Richburg. If you ever want to read something to open your eyes, that is it. We're all in this together, in this grand experiment known as America. We're all in it together, and I don't care if you're black, Oriental, Latino, it does not matter to me. We're all in it for the same thing, the same reason, to be free, to be free. To be the best that we can possibly be. Doesn't matter skin color. Doesn't matter status. It just doesn't matter. We're all in it for the same thing. We want the best for our families. We want to do good by our children. And when you have the Attorney General calling us a nation of cowards, that's just going back to the canard. You can't make it in this country. It's stacked against you. Everything is, because of the color of your skin, because you're a single mom, or whatever subgroup you want to lay out there. Victimizing Americans by playing to the lowest common denominator. Yeah, I can't. You're right. I can't be a success because of my skin color, because you know, somebody's got a lot of money, doesn't want to see me succeed. It's just, you know, it's just so frustrating when you've got the guy making this comment, a black man, the president, a black man, the heads of both political parties in this country, black men. They are the only ones that see race these days. Now, I understand, I'm not a naive fool that it doesn't exist. It does, and I know that it exists. But it always has, and it always will. It's reality. It is reality. And you cannot legislate morality, ever. All right, time to get off that subject and go to the world famous stupid stuff.
Oh, how come things that happen to stupid people keep happening to me?
You'll probably know how to get this. It's the last two that you got on here. I really need to start numbering all of them. Dateline Orlando Sentinel.com. Man robs beer from convenience store, sits down on bench outside to drink it.
Beer.
A man who tried to rob a convenience store and made off with he didn't try. He robbed him, didn't he? If he made off with two bottles of beer.
Yeah.
Didn't make it far. Sheriff deputies found him sitting on the bench outside the store with the beer. The suspect came into a Chevron in wherever shortly after 3:30 a.m. on Saturday, tried to buy two beers. The clerk told the man that liquor laws prohibit the sales of alcohol between 3 a.m. and 7 a.m., but the suspect walked behind the counter, shoved the clerk, told him he would kill him if he didn't turn over all of the money. Oh, so you got robbery, too, here.
Oh.
The suspect put his hand under his sweatshirt to imply he had a gun. This is just a bad move for two beers.
Yeah,
isn't it?
I think so.
Yeah, but the clerk...
Sounds like he's had a few too many already.
Yes. He shoved the clerk one last final time, grabbed the beer, and walked out of the store. Clerk called 911. Deputies arrived about 3 minutes later. Xavier Sierra, a 22-year-old resident, was sitting outside the store with his beer. Didn't have a weapon. Charged with robbery. Resisting an officer without violence. Being... You know, sometimes these things, resisting an officer without violence.
How does that work?
I don't know. I don't know exactly how you do that.
I don't know.
I mean, I guess you could just resist somebody, not fling a punch at them. I guess.
Wouldn't be much resistance if you're not resisting.
Good point. That's what I'm saying. I read that and I kind of got a little puzzled. DatelineOmaha.com. Happy family traveled with $2.5 million cocaine cachet. She don't lie, she don't lie, she don't lie. Cocaine. That's a fun word. Say that word.
Which one?
Cachet.
Cachet.
That's a cool word, isn't it?
That is fun,
yeah. It's a fun word to say. A motorhome with California plates was eastbound and rolling down, and I don't know how that goes. On I-80 this week when deputies pulled it over for driving on the shoulder of the highway. You know, next time you got 2.5 large of coke in your motorhome, you probably need to stay away from the shoulder.
Probably.
Yeah. I'd say a PSA, but that's not a very good one. Inside the $200,000 motorhome sat a couple and their 21-year-old daughter and $2.5 million in cocaine hidden in a floorboard compartment. It looked like a normal, happy family. The daughter was holding a puppy. And they found more than 235 pounds of individually wrapped bricks of cocaine. They couldn't get their story straight. You ever seen cops, you know, they separate everybody, and then they ask, and they try to link up the stories and see if they match up.
Right.
Well, normally this doesn't match. Don't you think you probably need to get a story?
Probably.
I'm thinking, if I want to do this,
yeah,
you know, stay off the shoulder and get a cover story together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
The wife said they were visiting cousins on the husband's side. The husband said he was visiting family on both sides. See?
Okay.
So I guess they kind of talked about it, but didn't really nail down the specifics.
Yeah, say which family members.
He didn't know the names of the cousins. He also said he had friends there, but couldn't recall their names. and he hadn't seen the cousins in 5 or 6 years. A minute later, he said that he had actually saw them last month.
Wow.
Yes. So they found it in their Jose Melendez, his wife Virginia Melendez, and their daughter Virginia Melendez Ramirez, 21, were arrested, charged with possession of a controlled substance with intent to deliver. Now, this is kind of funny. I don't know why you really put this in here, but the media just... Virginia Melendez's 49th birthday is today.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah, I don't really know how that goes. She's obviously spending her birthday, you know...
Right.
Behind bars.
Yes.
The family's dog, a black puppy that looked like a Shih Tzu, was taken to the Humane Society in Nebraska. Deputies were unsure of its name.
That doesn't matter either.
No, it really doesn't. And speaking of dogs, and this is going to sound kind of catty, but I didn't mean it. I don't mean it this way. Speaking of dogs, President Obama had... why don't they have a dog yet? That was all the rage, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, they've talked about this. I thought probably, when I was thinking, they'd probably get a Shih Tzu or a, what is the, Bichon Frise? You know, that French dog? French poodle?
Oh, poodle, yeah.
Yes, I think that would be perfect.
I think I screwed up.
Yeah, well, you have, because Shasha and Malia cannot be happy with not having a dog yet.
No, probably
but
not.
I did hear, actually, the First Lady say that they were holding out for a... Of course, they're going to be politically correct here and go to a shelter and get their dog.
Okay.
Now, they're holding out for a Portuguese water dog.
Okay.
Have you ever seen a Portuguese water dog?
No, I haven't.
Neither have I.
I've never heard of one.
Oh, I've heard of them.
We'd have to get online here and check that out.
It's a Portuguese. They're supposed to be, I guess one of the daughters has got allergies of some sort. So it's probably, it's a hypoallergenic dog.
Okay.
I think it's the first time I've ever said hypoallergenic on the air.
Probably.
Yeah. But my question is, my statement is, you know what's going to happen here. They're going to have somebody bring a Portuguese water dog and just kind of shove them into a shelter, and then they're going to show up and say, we got the dog.
Oh, yeah.
Which, listen, I could care less. I mean,
right.
I just can't imagine that there's too many Portuguese water dogs
exactly.
in shelters.
Yeah.
You're supposed to just say, Drew, come on, move on. Speaking of allergic, have you ever wondered if you could be allergic to water?
Yeah.
Yeah. You can't be.
Wow.
Because this is from the greatest 101 questions of all time. Allergies to a substance result when immune system antibodies attack it. No antibodies exist that bind to water.
Wow.
So how do you get, my question is, how do you get sick from drinking after somebody that is sick if no antibodies bind to said water?
I don't know.
I guess maybe the cup where you've...
Yeah, could
would
be.
That be? Yeah,
I think so. I don't know.
See, so we've found something. We found something here.
Yeah, like a medical breakthrough or something.
Yeah, just kind of take one of those wipes, one of those but then the water wouldn't taste very good, would it?
Probably not. It probably tastes like the alcohol swab or whatever.
But it's better than being sick.
True. Just don't go around to like a party and doing all the, you know, wiping all the cups off that you drink from, and then you get drunk from the alcohol in the wipes.
True. True. Now, how about this? If humans died out, would we evolve again from apes?
I don't know.
Of course, they believe in Darwin.
Right.
It says maybe if we were wiped out by a species-specific plague, which... I could care less. But my question here is, the premise is false. It says, would we evolve again from apes? Right?
Right.
That's a false premise. Because if you have evolved from something, that would mean there would be no more apes around.
I guess so.
Yeah, because you've evolved from that.
Yeah.
See what I'm saying?
Right, I do.
Which I think is the inherent flaw of Darwin's theory. But we really don't have time to go to Darwin's Theory, do we?
Not really.
As for this evening, thanks so much for joining us.
You've been listening to Airing It Out with Drew Skaggs, a presentation of the best country, 105.7 WLGC.
Tune in Wednesdays at 6 p.m. and Sundays at 5 p.m. for live shows on 105.7 WLGC and, of course, DrewSkaggs.com.